So the voluntary stuttering says to people, I think it's going to be very helpful in your journey to actually take this thing which scares you and bring it right out there. And when you stick your head in the tiger's mouth, when you go to the place that scares you the most, which is counterintuitive, it frequently liberates you from the fear.
Voluntary Stuttering and Pausing with Dr. Phil Schneider today on this Stutter Talk Tips from the Pros edition. Hey everyone, well, welcome to Stutter Talk, changing how you think about stuttering one podcast at a time. I'm your host, Peter Reitzes, starting off the show, as always, with some good voluntary stuttering. I'd like to welcome to the show a return guest, a great friend of mine, end of Stutter Talk, Dr. Philip Schneider.
Well, it's wonderful to be here on your podcast show and to be part of this wonderful project to bring information and create a place to dialogue about important issues.
Well, we're so happy to have you back on the show. You are always one of our listeners' favorite guests. So thanks for so much for your generous time today and always. Today we're going to be talking about how and why to use pausing, how and why to use voluntary stuttering, and how you mix the two in your work. Dr. Philip Schneider is a board-recognized fluency specialist and associate professor emeritus of communication disorders at Queen's College, has been in private practice for more than 35 years, is an advisor to Stutter Talk, and with Ori Schneider is creator of the film Going with the Flow, a guide to transcending stuttering. Phil, you ready to talk about some pausing and voluntary stuttering?
I sure am.
Now, just a quick disclaimer here. Tips from the Pros is not speech therapy and is not counseling or coaching. General comments about stuttering may not apply to any particular person who stutters or family member. If you are looking for a professional to help you work on stuttering, two well-respected referral lists are the Stuttering Foundation, stutteringhelp.org, and board-recognized fluency specialists, stutteringspecialists.org. So for today's episode, Dr. Schneider, what age group are we talking about?
The thoughts that we're discussing here together are not for young children. They're for older children, teenagers, and adults.
Let's start with pausing. Tell us how and why to use pausing.
Speech utterances are a continuous string of sounds. The longer the utterance is, the more complex the job for the brain to coordinate the muscular movements that are involved. And for people who stutter, the longer and more complex the utterance, the more likely there is going to be more stuttering. When an utterance is very short, the transition from one sound to the next occurs slower, and therefore it's less likely to create stuttering for a person who stutters. So when you pause often in your utterances, you turn large utterances into small ones. To be clear here, it's important that it not be sort of just a slowing down, but a complete stoppage. So if I were to say something like that, that's not the kind of pausing I'm referring to. It would be if I want to say something like this, this is an example of what I mean by lots of pauses. And that breaks the long utterance, this is what I mean by lots of pauses, into a number of short ones. In essence, it slows down the actual articulatory transitions from one sound to the next. And I think that is why it often significantly reduces the amount of stuttering.
So let me ask you a question modeling pausing to see if I have it right. So pausing is when the speaker puts space between words, not within the words.
Your example of the way you handle it was good, and the pauses were excellent. There are times when you might need to use pausing in some other ways, depending on the severity of the stuttering. And maybe we'll come back to that in a few moments. I wanted to say another rationale for this pausing idea. Besides reducing the frequency of interruptions, when a person who stutters practices a lot of pausing, it can actually reduce the severity of the stuttering, the amount of time and effort it takes to resolve an interruption. The normal reaction, which is reflexive and quick to stuttering, is to increase your physical drive, our physical drive, to go forward. And that generally increases the loudness of the voice and the amount of force and even the speed. And very often that increase in drive, which is a reflexive response to stuttering, in fact, creates a longer lockup and a longer, more dramatic interruption. When a person begins to become very good at pausing, they can pause when they anticipate difficulty, and they can also pause in response to difficulty. So if all of a sudden they get a sort of aura, oh my gosh, here comes a tough word, instead of blurting into it, they can actually wait a moment and surround that word with a pause, which will slow down the startup of the word. And they can actually, if they do get stuck and they're having difficulty, the response to it, instead of quickly trying to hurry up and push forward from the difficulty, the response which becomes trained is to stop in the face of difficulty. And those two things, stopping when you anticipate difficulty and stopping for a pause when you feel you are experiencing difficulty, can reduce the amount of struggle. So the pausing technique, and really, rather than seeing this as something as my belief or as a thought, the question is to explore it. And in a few moments, we'll talk about how to explore it and to see if these things are helpful for you as the individual. Be you a speech therapist wondering about exploring this with someone you're working with who stutters, or whether you as a listener are a person who stutters and wants to explore these ideas on your own.
Let me give one piece of that back to you using pausing, just to highlight it. Basically, you explained you can use pausing before a stuttering moment occurs, or if you're having a very stuttering moment, you can then turn on the pausing to reduce the frequency of stuttering.
This simple technique, which is very concrete and it's easy, even for older children can do it, teenagers can do it, adults can do it. Besides reducing the frequency of the stuttering, and besides helping resolve stuttering moments more efficiently, it does something else that's even more important. It's the most universal, simple technique to enhance the meaningfulness and the effectiveness of your message. So it's something that's used by great speakers all over the world, regardless of whether they stutter or not.
So, Phil, before we move on to voluntary stuttering, could you share one or two pausing assignments or possible ways to use pausing for a listener at home to try?
I'd like to share some concrete ways to begin exploring the idea of pausing, be it for yourself as a person who stutters or if you're a speech pathologist working with people who stutters, how you could begin to see if this could be a meaningful direction for yourself or people you work with. And the first point I want to make is I work in a conversational context as opposed to reading printed material or speaking to yourself or into a recorder. The work I do, in fact, all the work I do, deals with people talking to each other about real ideas and real feelings. So in this case, the way I begin is for the therapist to actually share something real with the other person and to demonstrate the pausing. And this could be done with a family member, a friend, a colleague, but someone close before you move on to do this with strangers in real life situations. If it were myself, I'd begin by speaking very much the way you demonstrated, Peter. And I do it by demonstration as opposed to by giving a lecture. So I might say, today I did something that I really enjoyed doing. I went for a walk in a beautiful wooded area right across the river from where I live. And you can play around with that. So you take a turn, and then the person who stutters takes a turn. And as soon as they put in that first large pause, which would be out of their natural pattern, I, as the clinician, praise, I say, that was a nice pause. And then gradually I fade out the pause. And if a person wants to get a little further guidance, I might say to them, after we've tried it out, you know, you can do one after one word or two words or three words or maybe four, but not much longer than that, and mix it up. And then a person tries it, and then the next thing is very important, which is to say, how does that feel to you? And the most common response, and even if the stuttering was significantly, dramatically reduced, the most common response, it does not feel good. It is not natural. It feels too slow. It doesn't have my normal passion, of my normal way of going. And I say, great. So why don't you go back to the, let's do a little bit fast. Forget the pausing. Let's go the other way. Let's follow your thought. And so I try to get a person to contrast sharing some thoughts and feelings with the pausing, with sharing some thoughts and feelings going quickly. And then we stop again, and I ask them to talk about their experience. What did they notice about the stuttering? What did they notice about how they felt doing it? And often the experience is that, yes, my stuttering was reduced, but no, I didn't particularly care for imposing all those stops on myself. I say, well, why don't you go fast? And if you feel like you're getting stuck or about to get stuck, switch to the pausing. And then when all is going well and you feel secure and stable, go back up to the fast. And then if you start to feel you're getting stuck or going to get stuck, switch back to the pausing. So that what I'm hoping that people will start to, and I keep asking people, how did that feel? What was the benefit of what you did? What was the cost of what you did? Well, I liked going fast because I felt free. I felt expressive. I felt passionate. Fantastic. But I noticed I had more interruptions and they were harder to manage. Okay, interesting. What about the pausing? Well, I noticed the benefit of the pausing was I had fewer interruptions. I felt more stable and more confident from a mechanical point of view. But it cost me some passion and some speed. I'll say, great. Think of your speaking as your car that you're driving. You don't want to drive in first gear all the time. That would be ridiculous. But you do want to be able to shift gear as you need to. Go into the higher gears when you want. Come back to the lower gears when you feel things are sticky or stressful. Respond to your needs. So this is how I go with the pausing. Starting out just with the person modeling and then you doing it and I reinforce you for it. And then we move to where we contrast the pausing with going fast. And then in the fast, the idea now, pause when you need to. So I have the proactive pausing, which is the decision I will pause before I start. And then there's the responsive, which is when I'm in difficulty or I anticipate difficulty, I can pause at that point and restabilize myself. And so I'm hoping the person learns that they can respond to their own needs as they feel they want to. They have free choice. So what I'm hoping people will experience by this is that the pausing is not curing their physiologic tendency to stutter. That would be, in my opinion, an unhealthy thought. It's trying to build a person's ability to make choices about how they work with their own body and that they have options. They're not obligations. They're not for someone else. They're not mandates. That you're welcome to speak quickly, even if it brings in stuttering, because yes, that's a part of how you want to express yourself. And you're also welcome and entitled to put in a pause if you need, because that's something that might make you feel more comfortable when your body is going through a bit of a struggle.
Let's just remind everyone, this is Stutter Talk. Peter Reitz is here with Dr. Philip Schneider. You've helped people with many other approaches and strategies, so can we move on to voluntary stuttering?
This is really an important piece. And again, we're talking on this show about people who've retained stuttering into either later childhood or adolescence or adulthood. So these are people who've been stuttering for years. And no matter what technique you offer a person, they're still going to be experiencing stuttering. Even if you think and if it occurs that one day they no longer have this trait, at least for some significant period of time, anyone who enters into a therapy process about changing and improving themselves is still going to have moments of stuttering, because we didn't start by defining stuttering, but stuttering is an involuntary, intermittent interruption in an otherwise normal sea of speech, which is just flowing. If a person thinks, and most people start out in therapy with a sort of a fantasy, the therapist will tell me what to do, I'll learn these techniques, and I won't stutter. And the reality can be very disappointing and very frustrating and disorienting, which is, I'm doing well with these techniques, I've reduced the amount of stuttering, but I still stutter. So a person needs to be able to deal with that reality as well. And one of the ways, and it's a bold technique and it's not for everybody, it takes a very strong, courageous person, because the norm with stuttering is to feel a bit embarrassed, frustrated, humiliated, and ashamed. And stuttering, unlike other things that we're ashamed of, can be hidden. The best way, by the way, if your goal is to not stutter, what's the answer? Don't speak.
Yeah.
If you're a person who stutters, the only way to guarantee that you won't stutter is to not speak. And most people figure that out rather early in life. So if the therapist is overly enthusiastic about any technique, it implies if you just got this right, you won't stutter. If you just got the pausing right, you won't stutter. And then the person goes out, they can do the pausing in a session, they can do a few practice rounds during the day, it works like a charm, but they still have a big day ahead of them, and there's going to be some spontaneous speaking, and there's likely to be some stuttering. So the voluntary stuttering says to people, I think it's going to be very helpful in your journey to actually take this thing which scares you and bring it right out there. And in doing that, actually, most fear occurs about things that we think are going to happen. That's the biggest fear. The actual happening is not as scary. So when a person who stutters makes a small voluntary stutter on purpose, their fear actually is reduced. And when the fear is reduced, the tension in all the muscles of speech, in the voice box, in the larynx, the vocal folds, and all the other speech-related muscles seem to ease up, and they often then experience an increase in automatic fluency, not controlled speaking, but automatic fluency. And the other benefit to deliberately feigning some stuttering is that a speaker experiences themselves taking charge of their own life and of their own situation. And one of the big elements in stuttering is it makes people feel out of control of themselves. But when a person is courageous enough to be proactive and instead of hiding based on shame and secrecy, actually takes their secret and puts it out in the open and says, this is something that's going on with me. And because if you hide it more, actually your fear becomes more entrenched and your pain more entrenched. And I've heard this expression, when you stick your head in the tiger's mouth, when you go to the place that scares you the most, which is counterintuitive, it frequently liberates you from the fear, and it also lowers all of that arousal, which makes speaking easier. It makes you more in touch with your own self. It actually allows your listener to know what's going on so that you can be connected. And the goal of communicating is to build a bridge between people. So if you're hiding something about your speaking and you're talking to someone, you're building a wall. And you just say to someone, well, sometimes I get stuck when I'm talking because I've grown up with a stutter. Oh, it builds a bridge instead of a wall.
Let's just remind everyone, Stutter Talk, Peter writes us here with Phil Schneider, Professor Emeritus from Queens College in New York City. Phil, I really love how you're tying this all together. So, you know, you're describing stuttering as a loss of control, and you're describing voluntary stuttering and pausing as different ways to regain control of our speaking system.
I like what you just said. That's beautiful.
I learned it from you. so, okay,
I want to share one little story brought this whole thing together for me. It's a story of a young man that I worked with, a young adult, and it was early on in my career. And I don't remember, we were using kind of slowed rate and reduced loudness and pausing and gentle onset. And the whole goal was, you know, he wanted to be able to speak with less stuttering. He might have said, I want to be able to speak without stuttering. I don't want to stutter. And I always say my line, then don't speak. And when I saw this man, he worked so hard and he practiced so hard. He was one of the most driven people I'd met. And I was feeling like Rocky. Wow, this guy, like I was his trainer. I felt really excited. And I think I wanted him to say, I'm so excited about all this. So I said to him, wow, you're speaking without stuttering. It's so amazing. How does that feel? And he looked at me and his face turned very serious. Do you really want to know how it feels? I said, yeah. He said, well, I used to feel like a person who was walking on the ground when I was talking. And once in a while I tripped and fell. And now I feel like a person walking on a tightrope. And I'm 100 feet up in the air and there's no net. And now I'm wondering when I'm going to trip and fall.
Wow.
And he was on guard and vigilant all the time. So the fear of stuttering, the amount of stuttering decreased, but the fear that he would stutter and all of his clothing would fall off, he would be disrobed, increased dramatically. And I realized there was something wrong here, and I began having to encourage him to actually play with the stuttering as well, so that he could feel the automatic fluency when he reduced the amount of fear and tension that he had, and he could also realize he was free to deal with the control, and he was also free to be a person who stutters, that was okay also.
So before we tie pausing and voluntary stuttering together, I'd love for you to share one or two ways for the listener to consider trying voluntary stuttering at home.
So I think any idea that you try needs to be done, first of all, with another person, with someone you feel safe with, if it's a therapist, if it's a close family member, if it's a close friend. That's rule number one. And rule number two, it needs to be done in a conversational sharing. And that conversation should be simple, not complex. Not a great time to bring up disputes and arguments and points of tension or your deepest emotions, because you won't be able to focus on playing around with your speaking. Take something small and simple. Describe the weather. Describe the room you're sitting in. And do it with a lot of pauses. And your partner can kind of, with a hand signal or with a comment, acknowledge, wow, you're really nailing the pausing. You agree on how much of that feedback you want or don't want. And if you're doing some voluntary stutters, my advice is make them small and gentle. This is not a time to try your most dramatic, getting locked up and frustrated and tense. So gently, little tiny stutters, something like your own stuttering pattern. And again, doing it with someone you're comfortable with in the context of a small, meaningful utterance that you generate. Not too complex. And then you can build it up where your conversation is becoming a little more interesting, a little more complex, and you can begin actually integrating the two things, doing some pausing as you go, and putting in some small stutters that might feel and seem similar to the ones that you actually experience, but at a low level of intensity. And then that's how I would begin. Where would you go from there? Gradually, and you would begin trying this with different people, because the more different people you do these two things with, the more likely it becomes something you feel you can really use. And you kind of work your way up a hierarchy from simple situations to more challenging ones. And you might go and mix the issue of face-to-face using of these things. You might do some work on the phone if the phone is difficult, and gradually put those together.
I'll share with the listeners that when we started working together, I was very hesitant to use voluntary stuttering. And what really helped me was when you did it. I mean, I was just shocked and amazed and couldn't believe that my speech therapist was putting stuttering in his mouth. And it was still hard, but it was just so reassuring.
I think it's important for those of us who work in this field and don't stutter. Feigning stuttering is still challenging and uncomfortable, but it's not really the same experience as a person who stutters, because I know I don't have to do it. And a person who stutters has a physical condition where they often are out of control because this kind of little interruption occurs. And that's categorically different than the person who's feigning it who doesn't stutter. So your job is always 10 times harder and requires 10 times as much courage and strength than mine. And I just want to make that clear.
Thank you. Let me ask you a question. It might be too much to answer right now, but you know, I can remember working with you on voluntary stuttering and going into a drugstore in New York City and asking for razors because razors are kept behind the counter. And it was always a fear of mine. And I remember the time that instead of walking out of the drugstore without the razors, I went in there and I voluntarily stuttered while asking for them. And I was so, it was scary, but I was so proud of myself for doing it. Do you have any suggestions or advice of when a person who stutters should push themselves from speaking to a loved one using some voluntary stuttering to moving to a restaurant or to a deli or somewhere?
I think the job of the therapist and the therapy session is to think about these things and to talk about them and to negotiate them. It's not for me to tell another person what they should do. Being a person who stutters is very challenging. I have my own challenges, but that's not one of them. And there are intense feelings of fear and intense feelings of shame. And that's different for each person. There are people who stutter who don't have feelings of fear or shame, and they can go in and do anything. And then there are people where it's really a huge battle. So sometimes the dialogue and talking about these things goes on for months or years before people are really ready to break the barrier. And as we said, stick their head in the lion's mouth, or in your case, go into the drugstore and stutter on razor.
Yeah.
So I don't give people assignments. I don't tell people what to do. I explore the issue with people. I help them start to find out that there are things they can do when they're ready to do. And one of the statements I make in the movie, Going with the Flow, and that's the point of the title of the movie, is I'm not the boss. I don't have the owner's manual. I help a person explore this issue, explore things they can do, and try to encourage, to support their courage, to help them build their own strength, to take on challenges as they see fit in their own time, in their own way.
Wow, very important. This is Stutter Talk with Phil Schneider. Now, I know there are people listening who are wondering how pausing, which is used to reduce the frequency of stuttering, can be used with voluntary stuttering, with stuttering on purpose. How do you use these tools together, or maybe more to the point, Phil? Could you explain to the listeners why these two tools, which may seem opposed, actually work very well together?
Mm-hmm. Sure. If the therapy that you engage in, and we're talking again about a person who's been stuttering for years, is only focused on how to reduce or allegedly eliminate stuttering, what is a person to do and how will they be supported when they do stutter? They may even be ashamed to tell the therapist. They may feel like they failed in their therapy. It's extremely important. This person stutters, which means that they are vulnerable to intermittent interruptions in their speech. And all of these skills about deliberately controlling the way you talk, they can be helpful, but if they become things that you must do because you're afraid of failing, in essence, and stuttering, then these very same tools become a curse. You become enslaved to trying to feel like you must succeed in the therapy to hide the stuttering. And you and the therapist actually become in collusion about that. So I think it's very important in the therapy that the idea that being yourself and feeling free to be yourself, stutter and all, and being a great communicator and engaging in any situation you want to, that's as important and maybe more important, because we want not just to reduce stuttering, but to reduce the impact that stuttering can have on a person's life. So if a person who stutters can feel strong stuttering and feel less shame and less embarrassment and less fear and less avoidance, they can be free to do anything that anybody else in this world can do, who doesn't stutter. And that doesn't mean they wouldn't want to or benefit from having some skills to tone down the stuttering when they want to. So to me, they're integrally, they look for some people to be contradictions. It should be either acceptance or fix it. And I think accepting yourself as you are with your challenges, your limitations, and your assets does not block you from growth. It opens the door to growth. It makes it easier to do the other things because your life is not being led by fear and avoidance.
So Phil, you've put out with Ori Schneider a wonderful, wonderful film, Going with the Flow, A Guide to Transcending Stuttering. And this film really showcases the work that you do. Could you just take a moment, please, and tell the listeners about this resource?
It's one thing to talk about this work, but Uri and I realize, wouldn't it be better if we could actually see people, hear their voices, see their faces, and watch them go down the journey of dealing with the mechanical aspect of stuttering and also the emotional aspect of stuttering. So this small documentary of 25 minutes actually follows two people in their therapy. It's called Going with the Flow because they make their own choices along the way, and their path unfolds in ways that we as the therapist wouldn't necessarily have predicted as they balance and move between different ideas of what they want to do and don't want to do. So if you're interested in this work for your own life and the things we've been talking about on the show, or if you're interested because you're a professional helping others, the documentary is specifically for you. And besides the documentary, there is also a lecture which goes over much in more detail of what you and I have been talking about on this show.
And this is Stutter Talk episode 325, and we're going to post the links to Phil's website and documentary, schneiderspeech.com, at the Stutter Talk website, so people can find your work. On your website, Phil, do you include the lecture too, or just the main film itself?
The lecture is called Straight Talk. So the lecture is there, and the actual documentary. Documentary is 24 minutes. The lecture runs more than a half hour.
Dr. Schneider, thank you for all that you do. It is greatly appreciated.
Back at you, Peter. Thank you so much.